Hey everyone, welcome back to the Change Your Mind podcast, where we explore personal development, spirituality, and science. I'm your host, Chris Ashley. I have a really exciting guest with me today. I can't wait to get into our conversation. But first, a couple quick announcements. Head over to the links in the show notes. You are going to find my lovely guest links. You'll also find a link to my book, Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality. It was endorsed by Bob Doyle, Marcy Shimoff, Michael Beckwith, all of whom are on The Secret. It was endorsed by John Gray, who wrote Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, Anita Morjani, who wrote Dying to Be Me. You'll find links to sponsor my podcast. You'll find links to courses, to coaching, to free masterclass, free downloads, just a wealth of information there. Also ways to connect on social media. So please come stay connected. And as always, this podcast is part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network. Sounds weird, a newspaper is in charge of a podcast network, but a huge personal development branch. We're putting on amazing personal development events. They are spearheaded by a woman named Mary Glorfield. She was Tony Robbins' EVP of production for 18 years. So I've gotten to share the stage with some incredible, inspirational people. All my fellow podcasters are phenomenal. Go check out their shows as well. What if the one thing keeping you stuck is the way you think? Welcome to Change Your Mind with Chris Ashley, the podcast where science meets spirituality and mindset becomes your most powerful tool for transformation. I'm Chris Ashley, author of Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality, trainer, speaker, and lifelong seeker. For years, I battled trauma, depression, anger, chronic illness, low self-worth, and the weight of old stories. Until I discovered how to rewire my mind, reconnect with my divine nature, and consciously create a new reality from the inside out. This show is here to help you do the same. Each week, we explore the intersection of personal development, spirituality, and science, diving into topics like healing, emotional mastery, entrepreneurship, resilience, and the quantum nature of reality. You'll hear powerful stories, gain practical tools and real conversations that will help you change your perspective, get unshakable confidence, and live the vision your soul has always known is possible. Whether you're navigating a major life shift, building your dream business, or seeking deep healing and alignment, you're in the right place. So if you're ready to break through, take back your power, and create a life on your terms, this is your moment. Let's break free from the patterns that hold us back, awaken to who we truly are, and rise. Your transformation starts now. And let's jump into it. So with me today, I have Marie Antoinette Kelly. Marie Antoinette is an award-winning artist who has done hundreds of commissions portraits, as well as the art for the Angel Quest Oracle. She's appeared on dozens of TV, radio, and podcast shows and has been published in such magazines as Edge and Authority. In 2019, her bison portrait in the form of woven blankets began selling throughout Yellowstone National Park's general stores. To find out more, visit her website at makefineart.com. But what I'm really excited to talk about as well is that Marie Antoinette wrote a children's book about near-death experiences. So welcome, Marie Antoinette. I'm so happy you're here with me.
Hi, thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I always start all my shows the same way, and that is by asking my guests what is their origin story. And I really want to focus on, at least to start, the near-death piece. So if you wouldn't mind explaining, like, what was your journey to want to write a kid's book about near-death experiences?
Yeah, that's actually pretty much my lifetime in a nutshell, because I have been fascinated with the other side ever since I was little. And as a child, I had a lot of other side experiences that I couldn't make sense of. And because I couldn't make sense of it, it made me scared. And that included being scared of death and dying and what happens. And so that fear was something kind of foundational in me that I had to outgrow as an adult, and it led me to search for the answers, and it started my spiritual journey and my self-development, really. And so along that journey, as I got the answers, I started to realize how powerful it would be if you as a child grow up with the knowledge that the other side is real, that, you know, there's life after death. And there's so much information about that out there now. So many people have had a near-death experience as the medical world keeps advancing. And, you know, they come back with stories. And while they're unique, they have fundamental ingredients that are all overlapping. And so I decided to take those fundamental ingredients and make a children's story that was based on the one particular near-death survivor, and that's Daniel Brinkley. And then include, steer away from his story a little bit because it's an intense adult story, his, and he was struck by lightning. But taking his fundamental story, softening it a bit, because this child in the book drowns in, which can be resuscitated, but then has an experience of the other side based on what the research shows is the fundamental ingredients of what happens when we die. And I put that out there, you know, first of all, because it was healing to myself, but also because I figured I'm not the only child in the world that's afraid of death and would like to understand this right from the start, rather than having to find your answers as a grown-up for the first time. And so, in a nutshell, that's my motivation for writing the children's book.
Thanks so much for sharing that. And you kind of glossed over that you had several experiences with the other side as a child. I'd love to hear more about those.
Oh, yeah. My whole life I've had that experience. And actually, it's interesting. Making sense out of our own spiritual nature has been kind of the underlying theme of my life that, you know, I try to address with this book as well. Because as we realize that, you know, there is life at the other on the other side, you know, do we have to wait for that life to die? Or is it available now? Is it interacting with us now? And so what I found as a child that it was interacting with me already. And I would have a lot of experiences of people that hadn't crossed over into the light, for example, and like tap me on the shoulder and I'd look around and I'd be like getting information. And it was very much honestly like the movie The Sixth Sense, which I have issue with, because there's some changes in that movie that they Hollywoodize, I like to say. And it was upsetting to me for that reason to watch it, because while my husband watched the movie and he was upset for all the scare factors, like it was scary to him to know that, you know, spirits can interact with us. For me, it was like, I remember this one particular scene in the movie, for example, where that boy sits there and a spirit comes into his sacred space and vomits all over him. And I realized that's the one thing that kept me strong and confident as a child, that sacred space couldn't be violated by those spirits. And so I realized that a lot of fear that I had was needing education, and I needed to understand how to interact with the other side that was contacting me, you know, for healing and for shifting and for like release, like I now know happens to spirits that are stuck, and how to use the language of prayer or sacred energy to strengthen myself and to release somebody from the other side, and understanding that there's a whole world to be understood that is the world of spirit and the way it interacts with us. So as a child, that happened a lot. And so these answers started coming as I grew up. And, you know, from simple things, even not even just people that had passed away, but one time, this as an adult already, but my sister was visiting, and she still lives in the Netherlands where I'm from. And I felt her husband, who was still in the Netherlands, tap me on the shoulder as well. He's like, get her to call me. So I was like, hey, Carolina, my sister, can you call your husband at home? He wants to talk to you. So she's like, well, how do you know? I said, well, he just tapped me. His spirit just tapped me on the shoulder. So she called him. And it turns out that he had just fallen out of bed with a nightmare, and he just wanted a little comfort and connect with her.
So wait, so, hold on. Was he aware that he had tapped you on the shoulder?
No. He was needing her though. So when she called, it confirmed that he did need her and that he wanted to talk to her. So he had must have sent out like a message, like, I want to talk to her. And that message landed. He wasn't like conscious of tapping me on the shoulder. He was just sending out like some SOS to his wife to call her, and I happened to pick it up, and you know, in the ether, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so it's the language of the other side. I realize it's very practical at the same time, very real, and sometimes it's just interwoven with everyday life, but in a way that we make more of, I mean, I don't want to sound like it's a bigger deal than this. For me, it's very practical at this point, and I wish to impart the practicality of the reality of the other side to children. And that's what the children's book is. You know, the subtle reasons for that children's book are all to highlight life goes on, and there is a reality of spirit that supplements our everyday existence in the physical world. And I hope I answered your question.
You did. So you also told me while we were in the green room that you were dead for 2 minutes at one point. What's that story?
Oh, well, actually, I gave birth to my son. It was a trauma birth. And so this is 18 years ago. He was dead for 2 minutes. I was dead briefly and then unconscious for like 8 hours. And came back. And this is actually after I had already written the children's book, and I had already been studying near-death experiences. And because of my childhood with my interactions with the other side, it was always a pressing quest inside of me to figure out how the other side really fits here for myself, rather than taking other people's word for it. So that led me on to studying other people's near-death experiences. And when we had the trauma birth, I was basically, he had a, there were circumstances that led up to it. And so in the moment that I abrupted and I'm basically bleeding to death with him still inside of me. Anyway, I don't want to go into the gory details. So in that moment, there were 60 seconds to save my life. My husband was rushing me to the emergency room because he was bigger and stronger than the nurses, and they were trailing him, and they were like shouting and trying to get everybody there together in order to do the emergency surgery to get him born and save my life. And the 60 seconds that everything was beginning to crash in on me, I recognized the ingredient of the near-death experience because I had studied them so much, and I could feel a 6-foot circle of incredible peace, like complete dissociation with the fact that I was in such an emergency and then I was at death's door. And then outside of that was this whirling chaos, just like the beginnings of what I would imagine is that tunnel. The activity's out there and I'm in the center of total peace. And then I remember thinking, oh, this is what it's going to like to die. And I thought to myself, but wait, I don't want to die. And these are quick thoughts. And I was like, I already know that the other side is real. I don't need further proof. And I clenched my fist and I was like, I need to be, I have two daughters as well as my son that was born in that moment. And I remember thinking, I need to be here for my two daughters. And I just like set my teeth and I just decided to be the survivor rather than to find out what death was like. And so in that moment, they froze my thought. And when I came back, they told me the story that because I thought I was really fighting, apparently, when I was, first of all, I had flatlined and then I was unconscious because they had overdosed me and I had lost like almost 2/3 of my blood. And so trying to get me back was the question. And they didn't know if my kidneys or liver would turn back on because they were so traumatized by the experience. And so in that window, they said, I was fighting like an animal in death row. They needed 4 nurses to keep me on the brancard because of that last thought that I had, that I really wanted to be here. And so when I did actually come back, I thought to myself, how weird that that's the only experience I had when I was really just my physical self. Where did my spirit go? And then I remember laying then, obviously I had returned back to my body, and that clarity set in that people talk about with the near-death experience, which is, I had never been outside of that hospital, you know, standing. I had been brought in on a stretcher and I had only been in the room that I had been in. And I could enter. I could feel my husband enter the hospital. I could count the seconds that he was coming out of the elevator and coming through my door, and there he was standing. And so my whole world had been restarted in the same way that, again, people talk about they have in the near-death experience, that clarity of being in touch with a reality that is spiritual rather than physical, and counting our own interactions with other human beings in that reality was all available to me. And I could almost like see my little boy wasn't on the same floor with me. And I felt like I could see through the floors and be with him. And I could, then I got to see him the next It took 36 hours before I could actually sit up and go and visit him. But when I got to see him there, I still had that ability. And I remember seeing him standing next to his own body because he had been dead for 2 minutes. He had aspirated all the blood and there was a trauma in his lungs and heart. And so he had to be resuscitated and healed from that. So he had 15 wires and tubes going into him. And I wasn't allowed to pick him up yet, but I touched him. And I saw next to his own little body, I saw him, his soul. And he was 6'5" or so, you know. So I was like, oh my gosh. And I just knew it was like a spiritual communication, like all is going to be well. Like he was looking out for his own little body that he was going to forget that he was going to enter, but that he was going to use for this life that he's living. And so this is 18 years ago. And I remember saying from day one, I said, I told him that story as soon as he was, he grew up healthy, of course, right? He recovered from all of it. And so the story became something that I just shared with him. And over his life, I said, you know, you're going to turn to be 6'5", because I saw you standing next to your baby body. And guess how tall he is? He's 6'5". He turned into 6'5". So
that's cool.
It was just these moments that are outside of time that are really very incredible to be a part of. That actually reminds me of something else, because a week before the trauma birth, I was told that I could have this baby naturally, and I was already in the hospital because he had a birth defect and needed to be taken care of. And in that moment, I felt an incredible fear come over me, like something wasn't right. And this is a week before this event that I just touched on with you happened. And I remembered needing to shift that fear. And in order to do so, I used whatever healing techniques that I knew, kinesiology techniques and prayer and meditation. And I spent 4 hours literally talking to each one of my organs to shift the fear that was in them so that I could set them free to connect with source. Because I know my hair will grow without my permission, my nails will grow just fine without me getting involved. And I knew that each of my organs could do what I needed it to do without me telling them or limiting them with my personality or with my fears. So that took 4.5 hours. It was like a really profound, deep, sacred meditation for me, after which I fell into a deep sleep and I was really at peace. And I woke up the next morning, and this was July 4th, and they said the NCU had filled up, so I couldn't give birth that day. And I was like, oh my gosh, I must have passed the test and shifted the fear, and it's all going to be okay. And little did I know, I needed a few more days to integrate this big energetic shift for the real journey that was going to happen, that disaster moment where I had 60 seconds to live and they couldn't even get a knife. They only used a blade, and, you know, the radical, extreme, violent moment in which they didn't know how much medicine I needed and they overdosed me and all that. And when they said, I don't know if she's coming back, they came out crying and we don't know if her kidney and liver is going to make it. I knew they would because of that event a week before. And I believe that all of that is part of the same story of spirit, just constantly guiding us if we can only listen, even if we don't understand the steps, just surrender to these steps and then participate, which I ended up being very grateful for, because I do believe that I'm sitting here intact and strong and healthy because my organs did what they knew they could do best in spite of me, in spite of my fears, and then brought me back. And life has been an interesting journey with those kind of communications and interactions now being kind of how I live and making it special. And again, taking it back to the children's book, it starts with understanding that death is not the end. And it starts with understanding that there is an entire realm of spirit supports everything that we do that is a physical awareness. And I wanted to start at the beginning with children, so they, when they're naturally psychic personalities and their natural intuition as children, keep that alive, knowing that is a communication. It's a form of being connected to your spirit guides, to angels, to those who guide us, and to keep that alive for a lifetime so that we can have more success and more and better results with the challenges we go through here.
Totally. And I mean, kids really are tapped into the other side more, right? They're like fresh from the universe. They're closer to source. And I was just reading some crazy statistic that was like when kids are like two or something, like 99% of them are a genius. And then as they start to go through school, it's like less and less because they're losing that. They're getting programmed, right?
Right.
But I just want to just talk about your story for a moment. Like, that's so scary. Like, as someone that I just gave birth 9 months ago, and I'm like, it's like so fresh for me. And I'm like, that is so scary.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's why I'm reluctant to tell it, because I don't want to go into the fear of it. And there's a lot of gory details that would sound like a horror story. But what I was protected by the entire time was the connectedness to the other side, which was really holding me and steering me. And my husband is the one that came away with the PTSD, and I didn't.
So, oh my gosh, I can't imagine how traumatizing that was for him. And like, it was, I love that. You made the choice, like in that moment where you clenched your fists and like clenched your jaw, and you're like, okay, I actually don't need to know what it's like to die because I've done the research. Like, I need to be here for my kids. Like, I'm meant to be here. And it, like, you hear that, like, I'm also we kind of talked before the show, we have a lot of similar interests. I've also studied so many NDEs. I've read so many books. I've watched so many. I just had Paul Perry on my television show, and he co-wrote all the books with Dr. Raymond Moody, right? So like, literally, like, he has all the stories. And where was I going with this? So many of those instances, like, the person has the choice if they want to come back or not, right? And it's like, you made that choice before you even went to the other side. And so it's almost like,
I realize
okay, we're not, I wonder,
like,
if that's why you didn't like see anything, right? That's why you didn't have that classic thing, because you already made that choice. And
I think the other part of it, the heavy medicine that I was under, I think they were affecting my spiritual faculties to some degree. But, you know, because it was such a smack to my consciousness. But at the same time, by the way, Paul Perry endorsed the book, and so did Anita Morjani.
Amazing. They're both incredible human beings.
And they read this book, and they said it is the story for children that is true to the experiences that are out there. And it is true that you make these choices, and that we, each and every one of us, do.
That's awesome.
And in that moment, I remember feeling almost like greedy for wanting a near-death experience out of it, because it's one way to romanticize it, but a near-death experience comes with a lot of pain. Let's be real about it. You know, to die and come back is a lot of suffering in your body that you have to shift and work through. And the beauty is the blessing of the great story. But if you can get that beauty and the blessing of a spiritual connection without the suffering of having to die first, that's all the better. And so I realized that I had enough of those experiences to stop doubting. I was like a doubting Thomas. And I was like, just embrace it. And I since then, before this experience 18 years ago, I was the kind of person always wistful for the other side. I was missing my heavenly home. I knew it was out there, and I wanted it back. And I was like almost dismissive of the earthly experience. I never really, you know, did the party life or anything, because it couldn't like touch what I was feeling. The other side really holds for me. When I had this dramatic experience and I made that choice, like you just said, I calmed down. I was like, you know what? I'm here. This is a profound experience to be alive. I can't just discard it and think the other side's better. I'll get there in due time. And I calmed down, and I finally started living the life that I feel I'm here to live, that appreciates what we do here, how we create here, which is another sub theme for my children's book, that I think when you understand where the pieces fit, that there is spirit, that there is matter, and that they both support each other, you don't have to go through these moments of angst that you want to be somewhere else and not here, versus only here and forget about the other side. Each has its proper role to play. And I feel much more alive now, interestingly, because I have consciously embraced the reality of spirit while also fully being grateful for the fact that I have a body and that I got to live, that I got to stay alive and be here and be part of it all. So that kind of straightened that whole dilemma out for me.
Totally. You know, I appreciate everything you said, because as you were talking about how, like, you kind of, I think you said selfishly wanted one. Like, I totally relate to that. Like, so my dad and my like heart dog both passed away within the last like year and a half, 2 years. And as I was getting my labor was coming sooner and sooner, like I had that thought and I even said it to my husband. I was like, I want to like have a near-death experience while I'm giving birth so that I can see my dad and Soda again.
Yeah,
and my husband was like, don't you dare fucking do that to me.
Real.
but you just said something that totally resonated though. You're like, I already have those experiences. And, and the truth is like, they visit me all the time. Like I've had so many experiences with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I just appreciate what you said because it just kind of like came full circle for me. It's like, yeah, I don't need to do that because they are here and I do have those experiences. Yeah. So thank you for saying that.
That's the rest of my journey too, is to realize that what I really had to tame is my rational mind that wants to pluck it apart and understand it from a place of like proof rather than the gentler side that gets the proof in the synchronicities, in the information. Now, how could you know something so accurately instantly, you know, the way spirit communicates? And so there's lots of proof, but it doesn't come in these hard and solid facts that you can dissect. It's just in a more of an opening of your heart and a softening of my being. And that made the relationship very natural and very everyday.
And I think to your point, like we have our ego mind, our rational mind, our like the human part that like wants to like understand all of it, but it's like, and wants to like dissect it, like you said, but it's like our heart and the spiritual side of us knows that those aren't coincidences, knows that we're always in touch with source. Like, I mean, we're asleep for 8 hours a day. Of course we're like back in touch with source energy. Right.
Right.
But it's like our ego mind is like kind of becoming that filter.
Yeah.
So we're always in touch with it, right?
Right. And I'm hoping that, because, you know, children don't have their ego mind yet. That starts to really develop in their teenage years. And so if they already are aware of the reality of the spiritual communications and connectedness, then that is like a muscle that won't atrophy and it'll become part of life as they grow up and evolve. And then hopefully the existential crises will be less in their teenage years and the answers and the balance in life will be more graceful and natural as they keep those faculties open. Those are all kind of wishes of mine that I hope a book like Teaching Us What Happens When We Die can begin to facilitate or set in motion.
So can I ask, like, I'm assuming that you instilled all of this kind of knowledge in your own children.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think that that's affected them as they've grown up? Because again, like I have a 9-month-old, I'm thinking about all this stuff. I have Neil Donald Walsh's Little Soul in the Sun and like all of these books, which is like the most beautiful book ever too. I'm totally going to buy yours for my kid.
Thank you.
But how is like instilling that kind of knowledge changed your kids or affected your kids?
They have grown up to be the most beautiful, balanced, insightful, intelligent human beings. My boy is now 18. My daughters are in their late 20s and they have kids of their own. So I have grandkids now.
Oh,
and
nice.
I just see the strength in them. I just see the balance in them. I see their ability to face challenges of the everyday that allow them to look for answers. Because when you have a spiritual connection, you just know that if you ask the right questions or you listen profoundly enough with your deeper senses that you can find answers to problems. And so they're really strong people. They're really just the kind of people that I now admire and have seen just grow up to be really just complete human beings. You know, they'll have their struggles, but they know now how to draw on all of their being to get through stuff. And they just live the most amazing lives. And they're very inspiring. I notice in their own way, they're very inspiring to their generation and other people. So again, I think that's the power of spirit working through. It's all that, you know, the language of inspiration is so strong. And I see that in them. They're beautiful people.
That's really cool. You light up when you talk about that. And it makes me think about what we were just saying too, where it's like, you know, kids are so much more in touch with source. And like, if you even have like all those children talking about their past lives that they remember and stuff. Mm-hmm. So like, do you feel like incorporating this kind of stuff into your kids' lives made them not lose that genius, made them not lose touch with that other side? Like, do you feel like they still remembered all of that? Like,
yes and no. Some of the things that I remembered for them, obviously more of a curiosity point of view. And so they have their own growing to do. and they wrestle with their own spiritual questions of what's true. And I've learned from my experience and seeing in them that it's as much as I want to find answers for them, it's really the answers they find themselves from the other side that are the lasting ones and that are really causing the breakthroughs. But the tools of how to do it, like, you know, like Marianne Williamson's Am I Mommy, Talk to God, is like teaching you how to just make simple prayers for people. And just these children's books that Neil Donald Walsh, hopefully this one about Danny's Day in Heaven, they do plant the tools in the children so that as they grow up and they mature, they can, I've always set them free to find their own spiritual path and not limited it to one religion or the other. And so they're finding inspiration in numerous ways now, but the answers that they find for themselves coming from the questions that they had for themselves are the ones that really stick. And so whether I had flashes on their past lives or not didn't matter so much. That was more of like curious to them, but not necessarily defining. They are doing it on their own.
I guess that's also part of being a parent too, right? Like you can tell the guy that like they have to experience it.
But, you know, knowing about the spiritual language, like learning about your chakras and things like that, these are important energy centers in your body. You can't underestimate the power of understanding all the tools that we have access to in life. It's really for mental health, emotional health, physical health, spiritual health. You know, it's making very integrated people. So I'm really happy that I was able to contribute some and that they are open to those tools. I do think it makes for a balanced human.
Absolutely. Yeah. And knowing that like we're not alone, that we have guides and that we are so much more than our physical bodies.
Yes.
Like you said, it gives them more tools in their toolbox so that when challenges do come up, there's a different perspective than maybe there would have been.
Yes. And teaching them about the nature of the subconscious and how you can have program blocks in your own being that stop you from perceiving a spiritual message, for example, because if you don't have the freedom within you or your own fears or a programmed mind that is set in its ways, knowing just the parameters of the matrix we exist within, I suppose, is really powerful. And they do knock on my door if they have like big pressing questions like, hey, can you help me sort through this? But I think, again, taking it back to the children's book, it's super important to give tools rather than answers and letting them find the realities of spiritual guides or guidance for yourself through your own experience rather than somebody else so doing it for you.
Yeah, totally. So what age is your book made for? Like, what age does someone start reading that kind of, I mean, I'm already reading my kid this kind of stuff, but like, I mean, when do they really start to like have those conversations?
Well, I think it depends on the child. For me, it was always part of my life, but my children were really open to it as little kids. And then as they matured and the rational mind kicked in, the ego mind kicked in, they naturally got scared of it. What is death really like? Because the heavy emotions come in with it and stuff. So it's a maturation process because the subject is so big. But this book is particularly lighthearted and positive to introduce the nature of spirit. And it's very much geared towards children 6 to 10 years old. With, you know, the ones that are little, like my grandson was just 3 when I read it to him, and he just related to it as golden land, and he thought it was just this beautiful, you know, confirmation of how he relates to golden land. And so you have to kind of tune into your children. They won't get the whole idea of death anyway when they're little, because everything is in front of them and their parents are still so connected with them, unless they have had the unfortunate circumstance of losing somebody close to them. It's very much an extension of life rather than, you know, about death. And so that's a natural extension of life going on beyond death. When you get to the older children, you're dealing more with the grief, which is the language of the body and, you know, our physical reality dropping, you know, a person dropping out of that, where did they go? So the questions come. And so this book answers, addresses a lot of those questions, but the deeper personal questions are, I believe, within the domain of the parents anyway. So you have to fit that within your family discourse and your own family philosophy and take it the distance with how you are raising your own kids, because
totally.
The emotions come in.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of answered what my next question was, but just, you know, like when someone has passed away and crossed mm-hmm. over, like what have you told your kids, like when they were young? Like, did you kind of like go into the whole thing, or like, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's always been a natural lifestyle, because for me, like I said, as a child, I had, you know, a lot of spirit like knocking on my being. And I learned from that it's the unresolved life, the lives that haven't really completed what they were here to do, or somehow got lost along the way within something that trapped their experience of who they could be or what they wanted to be in life. And I have always taught my children that we are here for a purpose. You know, we have something written in our hearts that we are trying to remember, and it's up to us to kind of learn to tune into who we are and remember, and then contribute that. And if a person has had a fulfilling life or had a chance to contribute from the love of their heart, I have minimized the grief of the circumstances, knowing that they're not really gone. They've moved back into spirit, and they got out of life a beautiful experience. So it's something worthy to celebrate. And so we have taken that approach in a lot of cases. It's always harder when somebody dies through like a trauma or an accident or something, because yeah. I've come to realize what you grieve more than anything is the unlived portion of their lives, not the portion that they got to live, but they couldn't live. And so it's that then opens a whole avenue of exploration of letting go, and of, you know, the purpose in life, and more like Buddhism, and, you know, just knowing that attachments are the reasons for suffering. So you get into the spiritual philosophies to try and make sense out of, you know, the heartaches that we all go through. But in general, it's been presented to them and become very natural as a continuum, you know, where we exist before we're born and we exist after we die. And you try and maximize who you are by discovering who you are.
Okay. I don't know if you'd like see me tearing up over here, but what you just said was so profound.
Oh, thank you.
That you grieve the unlived portion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is so true.
Mm-hmm.
That is so, so true. And, you know, I'm thinking about like my own dad passed away 3 months before I got pregnant. And like, that's been so hard, like being like, oh, you're missing all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And you're so right. Because, you know, you hear people say all the time, like, oh, grief isn't for the other one, the people that go, because they're already in like an amazing place and they're on their next adventure or whatever. It's for us. But it's like, or you hear like grief is love, and it's like, yeah, all that's true. But like, I've never heard someone say it as like, just true as you just did. It's like the what if, or what could have been. And that's like such a lesson, like you said, in letting go of control, mm-hmm. because that's not necessarily what life is about. Right.
But I also want to comfort you, because I'm a portrait artist first and foremost before this book came into being. And as a portrait artist, I get to paint a lot of people that have passed away. And and so as I center in my heart during the painting process, sometimes I have experiences with people from the other side. And you have having lost your dad reminds me of this story from a lady that I'd never met. And so for me, there's a confirmation in that, because my rational mind didn't know nothing about her. It was just a commission through the internet. And I had to paint this person. And this is in the early days when I was first learning to listen to my intuition, and I was still kind of like battling in my head, like, oh no, that's weird, don't do that. Yeah, you know that. And learning to listen myself. And I felt very strongly prompted to set this person's head and shoulders and face in the stars. And that was first when I felt at the time that was really out of the box, because I was, you know, doing classical portraits at the time, but I just felt compelled. And I was putting him in the stars, and as I was painting, I was like starting to jam away to this John Denver songs. And I was like, you know, I like John Denver, but all these songs, I just like was compelled to put it on. And I kept hearing these phrases, how I love my lady, and you know how John Denver sings. So yeah. I was like, you know, I was like feeling like this wasn't me anymore. So I was like, I'm getting a communication from her husband. I'm just going to have to just jump in and be bold and send her this communication. So I typed up an email, and I'm more comfortable with it now. But at the time, that was like a big leap for me because I felt a bit like overstepping. Because again, the proof, right? So I typed an email. I said, you know, I feel like he's very much here, and I keep having to put him in the stars, and he just so smiling, and he's just so happy to share how much he loves you, and I feel like it's coming through his music. So she wrote me back an email, and this is important for you with your dad, I believe. And she said that every morning, she leaves at 10 o'clock in the morning to walk their four doggies. They were like schnauzers or something. And she walked all four of them while she was listening to John Denver songs, crying because she was missing it so much. And she was so sad that he wasn't there with her. And I was like, will you stop crying? Because he's clearly there. He's harassing me with his John Denver songs.
You're like, I don't want to listen to any more John Denver.
He's there with you, because how did I know she was listening to John Denver on her walks every morning? He's there with you.
That's so cool.
And then she said he was dying of cancer, so he actually made his poems. He chose his own memorial poem for his memorial. And she said, let me share it with you after what you said. And it was a little snippet from The Little Prince. And it was, in the stars I shall be living, in the stars I shall be laughing. And so it shall be as you look at the stars at night. I forget the exact words, but that you will feel my happiness fill your heart. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's why he's making me paint him in the stars. And he's just bright, so bright. And he had fulfilled, without me knowing any of those things, he had fulfilled what he had said in motion as a physical being on the other side, and then confirming it through this portrait back to his lady, who he hadn't forgotten, who he had not been missing. He was on the walks with her, obviously, aware that she was playing John Denver songs. And so from that, I do a lot of reflecting, and I realize the barricades are in us. They're not in them. They go towards oneness, and the oneness is with us too, and so it is with your dad. The barricades are in us because we are incarnated in a physical reality where we have to separate out. We have to make something out of building blocks, and in that separating out, we naturally separate out from the ones we've lost, but they're in oneness, and they're with it all. They're not missing out. They are part of your life. He is part of your life. Is it a daughter? You have a daughter?
Son. He's a son.
A son. And your son's life. So I was comforted by that. She was comforted by that. And the stories continue as I do more portraits. But, you know, people, I don't plan the confirmation. The confirmations just come knocking because I'm not the one generating. It's the spirit of the person drawing that will generate them. It's a very strong, convincing proof that we're so much more than our physical bodies, and we don't actually lose the ones we love. And that's another message in the children's book, that you never lose who or what you love, because the connection remains.
That is a phenomenal story, and thank you so much for sharing it. And I didn't realize that's the cover of the book behind you, the painting. I love that. It's so cool.
Danny's Day in Heaven. Yeah,
I'm totally going to buy it for my kid. I love it.
The book is meant to be comforting because it is reminding us. It's not telling you how you should think of what it needs to be. It's set up as a reminder what you already know inside of you. Mm. You know something from the other side. Every one of us remembers something, and hopefully you'll recognize some of what you remember, and then you can expand on your knowledge by your own experience.
So it is in the book, and we only have like a couple minutes, but in the book, I know you said that it touches, he drowns, and then it touches on all the classic NDE things. So I'm assuming like the out-of-body experience, the life review, like all of that. Yeah. And then does he see people who have passed? Like what else happens? Does he end up coming back? Like what's the whole...
It's all of the above. He has the life review and I did that on purpose because based on the life of Daniel Brinkley, he learned that firsthand. He wasn't a nice guy before he died the first time. Mm. In fact, he was in the army and he actually ended having to kill people on missions. And so he, of course I couldn't introduce that topic to children, but I made him a bully. And so he was a bully. And then when he drowns, he touches the other side. He touches a world of infinite love and support.
Beautiful.
You can see him going through the tunnel. And he's going in feet first, because that's one thing that Daniel observed. He went in feet first into the other side.
That's amazing. So, the art is gorgeous. Did you illustrate it too?
Yeah, I illustrated it. Mm-hmm. And so here's his life review, having all the vignettes. And so he sees in that all the moments of heartache and misery. And from that, he wakes up to the contrast of the much love that he finds himself in now and how healing it is to be loved unconditionally. And then from that, he gets the message that, you know, he's so much more capable of loving than he has allowed himself to be. And then he meets a second grade teacher who died and realizes that she is still alive and she is still learning and growing. And you never lose. He actually gets to meet his puppy, who he also loves.
Oh my God. You're going to make me cry again.
The geometric flowers and just the
nature. Yeah, no, the art is stunning.
Thank you. And then he gets, you know, taken back to his body. And you know, obviously he's resuscitated with a smile on his face because the message is so profound that I am with you always. I'm only a breath away.
Oh my gosh. Amazing.
The connectedness I feel is what we all hunger for. I think so many of us feel lonely. We feel lost a little. We feel isolated. And it's the connectedness that begins the healing. And then from there, you know, the magic unfolds. So that's my wish, to bring that to children.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm just so grateful for you for coming on today.
Thank you.
I'm going to go buy your book. and hopefully a lot of other people will as well, because I think it's really important. Like you said, you know, we have fear when we don't understand something, and sure, we don't fully understand, but there are so many accounts.
So many
from all over the world, from different beliefs, and they all have those same elements. So,
that's right.
You know, to say that we don't really know what happens is like a little bit crazy.
It's like having to reinvent the wheel. You can't take what's now out there. There's so much awareness out there. It's definitely not a black hole. The black hole I used to be afraid of as a child is incinerated. That's no longer a thing.
Totally. And if I'm sure, you know, if you want to just take a moment to let viewers, listeners know where they can find the book, where they can connect with you, anything else you want to share.
Oh, thank you. Well, the book is published through Beyond Words. So you can go on their website, or you can find it on your local bookstore, indie shops, or also on Amazon. Also on my website, which is makfineart.com. And I have an Instagram and Facebook handle, makfineart. And if you wanted to drop me a line on email, I would love to hear your experience with the book or a story that you want to share, and stay in touch.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Marie Antoinette. It has been such a pleasure. If you're listening, please send this to someone you think would resonate with it. Like, comment, share, subscribe, all of the things. And I will see you all next week. Have a beautiful rest of your day.